This might be disappointing to a few people. I will try to speak slowly, which won't be disappointing, but what will be disappointing is that I'm not using slides. I hate using slides, even though I do recognize it's easier for people who do not speak English natively to follow if you're looking at the cartoons. But slides tend to reduce things to bullet points. That's the whole point. And as a result, actually constructing an argument is less important. You're just giving people facts, it seems. And I actually find arguments much more interesting. So I will be not using slides and rather just briefly going over notes that I've made to myself here. However, I will be publishing my presentation both on my blog and also on the website. So if you want to go over and figure out what I said, you're more than welcome to. So do forgive me for not using slides. And if I do seem to be speaking too quickly, do try to slow me down. I do respond to waved hands or things like that. So we can begin. Firstly, my name is Louis Suarez Potts, and I'm the community manager of OpenOffice.org, and have been in that role now for about 4.5 years. I've been associated with OpenOffice.org since its inception, and it was born October 13th, 2000. October 13th is coming up, and you should mark it on your calendar as an important date for various reasons. Enough hints. I work for CollabNet. CollabNet is paid for by Sun to host and to manage, I'm the management part, of OpenOffice.org. I'm impartial in this sense, meaning that I pretend not to work for Sun directly, and I don't, and so I can pretend to represent the community more. This is important because the community of OpenOffice.org now numbers tens of thousands of people, not all of whom are with Sun. As we are addressing this populace in this room, and as we've seen in all the presentations so far since the conference began in Slovenia, many of the community have nothing to do with Sun. Yet it is, of course, Sun that is developing OpenOffice.org in conjunction with other large enterprises, and to them we owe our thanks, we owe our gratitude quite plainly, and our consideration that, and our hope that they will continue doing it. I'm pretty sure they will. So let's begin with some facts. OpenOffice.org today has at least 40 million users. We can't count them exactly because we don't identify when someone downloads and installs and uses OpenOffice.org. We only count page hits on our download pages. We have, as of a couple weeks ago, 47 million page hits to the download pages. That's not counting people who have obtained OpenOffice.org through Linux distributions, through BitTorrent, P2P distribution, through CD-ROM, or some other means. For example, somebody gave it to you. It's not counting, say, one download to a 10,000 person company, or one download to a 50,000 person government office. It's not counting any of that. So we pretend that we can think of OpenOffice.org as numbering 40 million users. And it's also not counting people who are using the open document format in other forms, such as StarOffice 8 users. So it's a significant number of people. It's significant enough that Microsoft Office does count us as being quite threatening to them. That's an odd sort of compliment. But Microsoft Office is increasingly anxious about OpenOffice.org and is increasingly copying our strategies. We go to this country, we go to that country, we emphasize localization, we emphasize building up community support, and Microsoft Office tries to do the same thing. It doesn't quite succeed, but it's still trying. It's an odd compliment. What makes OpenOffice.org count, though, is really the development. The people who are developing, the developers who are programmers, the contributors who are writing documentation, templates, helping in marketing, support. That's what's making OpenOffice.org really count. And the last year, as 2.0 has approached, we have picked up the pace astonishingly. In the last month alone, I have been tracking how many issues have been filed, and it's something like 100 issues a week at least. Which is, just think about it, that's kind of incredible. We went from something like issue 50,000 to, I think, what, we're 58,000 now or something more in about 6 weeks. It's incredible, astonishing. Most of those are developer issues, too. They're not just bogus issues where a user has decided to file an issue saying, blah, blah, doesn't work, can you help me? They're real substantial issues. They're being addressed and resolved incredibly quickly. So there's an extraordinary pace change right now. The other thing that has happened is child workspaces have been given out very quickly. If a developer who has the skills and talents wants to work on the code, he or she is pretty much immediately, after they've shown themselves capable, given a child workspace. They're able to contribute meaningfully. We're paying attention to developers who want to contribute, and we're aware of how we can improve the process. So with 2.0 having just about hit the market, we have made substantial changes, and our changes are reflected in how people are approaching the contribution to OpenOffice.org. And I haven't even mentioned the more fun part. As you know, a couple of weeks ago, Sun deprecated the SISSL, the Sun Industry Standards Software License. It had been used by OpenOffice.org and a few other groups for quite a long while, more or less since the inception of OpenOffice.org, since 2000. The reason it was used, and what SISL did, as we called it, is it was basically a BSD-like license. The reason it was used is because we wanted to distribute in the market OpenOffice.org as quickly as possible. It worked in that way. There are, I don't know, maybe Erwin and I can come to some numbers of this, but probably a dozen small forks, companies selling minor modified versions of OpenOffice.org, which is okay, but they weren't publishing those patches back. They were just taking the profits, accepting our work, and that's it. They weren't part of a community. And being part of a community, that is to say, being a responsible part of a community, because otherwise you're not really part of a community, is very important in open source. It became clear in the last couple of years that what really counted was not just making the modifications, not just using OpenOffice.org and instead of, say, Microsoft Office, but actually contributing in some interesting fashion. And the contribution can be by non-programmers of some simple things as, say, help documentation or support. But when people are making modifications to the actual source and not publishing those patches, that's a negative in the community. So by deprecating the license, which was done for purely simplification reasons, or reasons to simplify the process for developers, we also made it, how should I say, easier. We strongly encouraged anyone who does make a modification to publish those patches. By publishing, they're making those patches available to the wider community. Already, we have had mail from CHIOffice. Erwin sent me a message after he contacted CHIOffice, which was using OpenOffice.org, that they would be agreeable to working with us. There are several other large companies, well, relatively smaller companies, which are in similar situation, who might actually start working with us. We can name them pretty easily. There is a Finnish company, SOT Office. There is a Chinese Red Office. And there are several others. I am hopeful that they will start publishing their patches. After all, it's a law now. And I'm hopeful that they will be agreeable to working with us, thereby strengthening the the project, making the product better for everyone. They can still sell their own modified versions. Making it closed doesn't really necessarily help them, but it does help everyone to make things open. OpenOffice.org is satisfying a global hunger. This is why there are so many small companies that are trying to profit from OpenOffice, and this is why it is being localized to so many different languages. At the Native Language Confederation meeting yesterday, Charles Schultz told us that it had been localized, I believe, to well over 65 languages, and it is supported in well over 50 languages, meaning that you have communities supporting people who are using OpenOffice.org in those languages, including Slovenian. It's being used by these people not just because it's free, you don't have to pay for it, but also because it's open source code. That's the most important part. Today at this press conference that I attended, the politicians there very intelligently and knowledgeably spoke of the importance of having the open standard, which we're using nowadays, because this means it's open for everyone to use, modify, and it can be evolving. But the open source element is extraordinarily important, perhaps more important. And we see people using OpenOffice.org for the reason of cost, open standard, and open source. They're all competing reasons. They are very appealing to governments because governments can point to their use of OpenOffice.org and say the people of the world or the people of my nation are going to be happier because I'm using a democratic file format. Anyone in the nation can now read OpenOffice.org files because they can obtain OpenOffice.org freely. It's an important step and one that we have to continue with. The result is that countries though, like Italy, the Friuli government is very strongly behind using open standards and open office and free software. Countries like Brazil, where there are at least 2 million people who are using OpenOffice.org, the government is very strongly behind the use of OpenOffice.org, the deployment of it throughout the government agencies and also to people in schools, and the development. I was in Brazil recently and we had discussions by developers to utterly packed rooms in this open source conference. The most crowded rooms were the ones dealing with OpenOffice.org. Developer conference discussions about how they are creating, say, a grammar checker for Brazilian users of OpenOffice.org. This is exciting news. Developers are starting to work on OpenOffice.org in schools and outside of schools, for corporations and independently, not only because it is paying for, but also because they can invest in the knowledge that they are gaining by working on the project. The government is endorsing it, the government is behind it, and we can hope that in a short period of time, say 1 year, there's going to be extraordinary growth in this area. These governments and corporations then that are using OpenOffice.org are using it for political as well as technological reasons. They are different reasons, but they do have, interesting, they are different reasons, but they do have the coincidence, the intersection, both for politics and technology. For the two reasons there is a marriage. They are satisfying the similar democratic interests of the people, both to have an application that they can modify and develop on their own without having to use a large, remote, proprietary company, and also file formats that they can then save, that they can essentially own. This presentation, which has already gone on about 20 minutes before I really even start, doesn't begin really to address everything that's happened in the last year or everything that I anticipate will happen in the next 5 years. Today marks, or will soon mark, on October 13th, our fifth year. It does, I hope, point to a few things that I find really interesting and that I'm hoping can be developed even further. Well, actually, did you have to? By the way, I'm using the latest version that was given out in the CD. If you haven't gotten it, I really urge you to get it, of RC1. And it's a Mac OS X version that was created by Eric Bashar along with his team, and it's a superior version. It's really wonderful, and if you don't have a Macintosh, you should get a Macintosh. But once you get your Macintosh, I urge you to use this version because it's incredibly fast. I've seen OpenOffice.org on Windows and Linux, and this blows it away. It's also just beautiful to work with. So anyway, that aside, what I did shortly before I wrote this is I asked the project leads to send me status reports of what's going on in their projects. And unfortunately, I asked a little bit late, but on Friday. But nevertheless, quite a few of them sent me project reports, and I had my own sense of what was going on. But I am going to be focusing on the project reports that were sent, plus adding a few other things. And overall, I tried spending some time thinking if there is a way of synthesizing all the project reports so that I could state in a single sentence what was most exciting about the last year and what we can see for the next 5 years, and I can't. There's too much going on. OpenOffice.org is a collection of communities. Each community is doing interesting things. They're doing different things. They're doing really exciting things, but they're all slightly different, and so having one sentence would be a crime. And I cannot actually do that. So I'm going to be enumerating a few of the most important things, I think, or at least the things that were sent to me, plus other things that I recall. But if I haven't mentioned your project, it's not because I haven't thought of it or that I didn't think it was important, but because I don't have enough time or you didn't send me a notice. So that said, I'm going to start very briefly with technology. And I'm going to focus on localization. The localization is, to my mind, some of the most important and interesting work that is being done in OpenOffice.org, but I'm a little bit biased. It's part of the area that I understand best. The other elements are obviously even more important in some ways, but I understand them less well, so I'll just be repeating what people have said. But in terms of localization, where we stand now, as already mentioned, we have well over 60 different localizations. By the end of this, this time next year, I anticipate we will have 100, if not more. I'll give you a certain reason why. Technologically, it may be feasible, I think it is. But the reason why we will have more localizations is that right now, the Canadian government, as well as other governments in the world, we've heard about Massachusetts, for example, we know about France, we know Italy, we know of Slovenia, we know of Australia, we know of other places. We've seen about Vienna, we're hearing about Cambodia. Canada, some of the provinces there are moving to OpenOffice.org in the government offices. The languages of Canada are French and English officially, but they also have a large number of people who speak native languages, Aboriginal people there. Politically speaking, they need to distribute software that satisfies those people's linguistic needs. Microsoft does not. There are hundreds of native languages in the United States and Canada. There are only a handful of very important ones. I see in the future the possibility of native languages being developed on OpenOffice.org. We so far have none. I see also the possibility of minor languages with relatively few speakers being developed. The technology that 2.0 has made possible makes it a lot easier for people to localize. Previously, it was difficult, but as Pavlo Janik and Akidratis indicated, it's now a lot easier for people actually to sit down, follow the instructions, and come up with the localization of OpenOffice.org. This is one extremely important step. What has happened is that when we have these localizations, we raise an interesting question. Who does the localization? Until recently, we didn't really answer the question. It was just done by whoever happened to be around. But then we start having the interesting problem where you might have, say, the Brazilian doing a localization, the Brazilian group, competing with, say, the Sun official localization, or the Russian localization competing with the community localization. You have a group of people who decide, I'll do my own translation, I'll open source it, donate it back to the project, and then it turns out that Sun has already done this localization. Sun does now 11 languages for Star Office. The localizations are excellent. Sun pays a local company usually, contracts for it, then open sources the resulting languages. This works fairly well, it has worked fairly well, but there's some friction that has developed in the last couple of years, namely because community members often feel, well, we should be doing a localization. It's a way of developing local community, and it's a way also by which these people are able to exercise their power. Over, well, power sounds, that sounds bad, but it's a way they can exercise their interest. So what the Netherlands community has done in conjunction with Sun is essentially created a cooperative work so that they will work with people that Sun is contracted to do localizations and then often refine them. So the Sun, the local community, and the people Sun is contracting with are working cooperatively here, collaboratively. It's become an interesting model, the Netherlands equivalent. And I urge you to go to the Netherlands project, it's nl.openoffice.org, and see how Simon Brewer has described it. But what it does is that it opens up the door for a lot of development so that people are not really having to just concern themselves with competing with Star Office localizations, but rather are working with Star Office localizations. One of our goals in OpenOffice.org is to reduce duplication or needless duplication, to make efficient development. And this is one big step in that direction. The other elements in localization, of course, touch on the Native Language Confederation. These were originally created about 4 years ago to provide support and information for users of OpenOffice.org. There was a big concern when we first created these that these would be fragmenting the project, that people would think, well, why should I have any discourse in English? I should only be having discourse in my native language. So we insisted that all development be done in English, and the native languages can work in their own languages, but they would be doing only information and support. Over the last 2 years, the native languages have taken on the role of doing quality assurance, which is incredibly important, localization, increasingly, and then more. We have also discovered, well, we didn't discover it, I knew it from the very beginning, that many of our developers are coming from the native language groups. In fact, the majority of them can be said to be coming from them now. So an added obligation can be thought of as bringing the developers who are working in the native language groups to the core projects, making it easy for them to develop OpenOffice.org, all the five core components, not just localization. Working with them, answering their questions, introducing them, mentoring them, putting them in the project so they can help make OpenOffice.org that much better. The native language groups become windows to all of OpenOffice.org. They're not walled gardens, or they ought not to be. That is to say, they are entry points. They are not spaces that are closed off. So in the coming future, we anticipate this is what's going to happen, or at least I hope, that more developers who are working within native language groups will see the native language groups as vehicles for entering into OpenOffice.org, not as ways in which they can be distinguished from OpenOffice.org. It's a crucial distinction. We need to encourage more development by everyone who's working in OpenOffice.org in the overall project. The other point that I should bring up in terms of technology, which touches a little bit on localization and also in increasing the flexibility of OpenOffice.org, actually doesn't really touch on localization per se, and I'll drop that part, is the other well, from my perspective, that was actually incredibly interesting, is a URE that was announced earlier this year at the midpoint of the year. Does everyone know what URE stands for? It stands for the Universal Runtime Environment. Do you know what UNO stands for? This is Fundamental Technology to OpenOffice.org. And I'm actually not a developer, so at some point I'll start babbling and I'll prevent that by not going into that territory. But one of the announcements that was very interesting for earlier this year was the flexibility that was created by having this the URE, which allows, starting with 2.0 and beyond, OpenOffice.org to be expanded that much more quickly. This is a gift to developers. It's no longer it makes it easier for people who want to work on OpenOffice.org to work on OpenOffice.org. Similarly, as people will recall, there is a bit of a, not so much scandal, but a lot of heated discussion over the Java that OpenOffice.org uses. You recall Richard Stallman's letters and the discussion that followed thereafter. Well, the issue was that, very briefly, OpenOffice.org at the time for using all the components required the JRE, the Java Runtime Environment. And there are a lot of free platforms that would rather not use that for whatever reason, license, ideological, you name it. They would rather use so-called free Java. Yes. So this was effectively, it was an interesting discussion because what became clear was that there was a lot of work already done in this. And there's more work being done on it. It's almost completely ready now so that anyone who wishes to use, say, ClassPath or something like that, can. The most important man, of course, or one of the most important men in that discussion was Quaylen, who's standing right there, or sitting right there. And it was kind of funny because right when we were having this discussion, about a dozen people were frantically trying to get a hold of Quaylen, saying, you know, please shed some light on this, tell us what's happening. And he was on vacation, blithely ignorant of this discussion, and not really thinking anything serious about it. So when he comes back, of course, you know, he had a lot of email. All of it panicked. But it resolved pretty quickly. And at the moment, there's a fair amount of interesting discussion, or was, on the JDK list on this issue. It was a non-issue, ultimately. And meaning to say that the important part, the free Java runtime environments, are still being worked on. And I'm sure that we'll be having announcements in that area very soon. The other technological points, of course, is interesting. Most of the project leads who sent me information were not technologically oriented, so I had to do a fair amount of research on my own. And I'll actually spare some of this because you perhaps are a little bit familiar with it or may not be aware of it. But really, it has a lot to do with the, of course, incorporation of the database component in 2.0, and which we are using happily now, or should be, as well as the advances in porting. So I can skip over that fairly briefly. But what it does lead to is a question of how we were able to use the mentoring process for the Summer of Code. Does everyone remember the Google Summer of Code? It just completed. Google offered $4,500 US to developers, to students who are working with open source projects. OpenOffice.org was included in that list. We had about, I can't remember, maybe 10 different projects that were proposed, and we had about 8 or so students who agreed to work. They did brilliant work. The students also found that the summer was one of the best they'd ever had. I published some of their interviews. I urge you to read them. They are wonderful accounts of students who are enjoying working with OpenOffice.org and are also creating interesting work. What was crucial there, and it has to be continued, was that these students who started working on OpenOffice.org had mentoring, very serious mentoring. The project leads, or someone designated by the project lead, worked with the student on a daily basis. The person would tutor the student how to work on OpenOffice.org, would encourage the student, would assuage the student when the student had doubts, and would make sure that things were getting done. The result was that the students not only benefited and enjoyed themselves, but OpenOffice.org now, for example, has plugins that allow it to work with Eclipse, NetBeans. It has a grammar, it has the beginning of a good grammar checker. It has a whole bunch of different things that people have been wanting. In one summer, we accomplished a lot of things that had been not accomplished for a long time. What it tells me is that we need to develop our mentoring project even more so, so that if you want to work on openoffice.org, you need to have a process so that you can get a mentor quickly. The native language communities are extremely important in this regard, but not only the native language projects, also the core projects. So I'm going to briefly touch on a few other things, this time hitting on end users. And I realize that I'm running almost out of time, so I'll just briefly announce a few points. With OpenOffice.org's 2.0's improved UI, end users are directly benefiting. And one reason why corporations and governments are starting to use OpenOffice.org, of course, is because it's more closely compatible with Microsoft Office. But what is perhaps less well known is that end users are able now to get a whole bunch of documentation. Previously, they couldn't get complete documentation for how to use the project, the product. They got little bits here and there. There are now volumes that speak on how to use OpenOffice.org 2.0 for any level of end user. These are available at the documentation project in several languages, not just English. So if you have a group, a corporation, a government, and you have people who want to use OpenOffice.org 2.0, you can now point them to the documentation that gives you very clear instructions how to set up, how to use, how to create documents with OpenOffice.org 2.0. The difference is this. Corporations and governments ask us all the time, do you have support for OpenOffice.org? They think that open source projects don't have support. We can tell them not only do we have support, Sun, for example, sells support as do other companies, but we also have documentation that tells people how to use it. So governments and corporations are now more able to use the product. They are no longer able to say, well, there's no support, or there's no documentation, or it's too difficult, because we can tell them, no, that's not so. So in the next year or two, I anticipate a massive migration over to OpenOffice.org because the experience for users is going to be that much better. And also for corporations, it'll be that much better. The documentation project led by Scott Carr and Jerry Singleton is further working in making sure that OpenOffice.org can be certified and supported by for-fee companies like ECDL, like LPI, and so on. And so it is committed to making some criteria public so that these companies can then create programs and can be able to claim that they are in compliance with the criteria set up by OpenOffice.org. OpenOffice.org would see itself as normalizing the field so that people are able to say, yes, I comply with OpenOffice.org's criteria for support and training. This addresses the need that a country like, say, Canada might have if they migrate 500,000 people over to OpenOffice.org. They will need for some of those people to be trained. They will need for them to be supported. And so OpenOffice.org, by providing the support and training, or by not providing it, but by providing the criteria for it, plays an extremely important role. As well, for end users, we have improved the CD-ROM project and distribution mechanisms. If you get a CD-ROM now of OpenOffice.org from the CD-ROM project, it includes clip art, documentation, things like that. It used to just include the ISO for the image, for the disk, application itself. No longer. It's now a very complete thing. I would hope that we can do the same thing for the download installation, so that when you download OpenOffice.org, you're given documentation, clip art, templates, extra fonts, etc. Or you're given the opportunity of obtaining these things. These are possibilities. In marketing, of course, we are, for the last year, have been playing, especially for the last 6 months as we were waiting for 2.0 to be completed, we were playing a necessarily passive role. That will end. Our marketing goals have to be a little bit clearer. We have to be aggressive in actually not only seeing new fields, but also in presenting examples of how OpenOffice.org can satisfy needs. We can't be in any way passive about this. We have the technological edge right now. The technology for OpenOffice.org 2.0 is superior. But a lot of people don't see that. They see Microsoft Office's very impressive presentations. And they say, well, can OpenOffice.org do that? Where can it do it? Where can I find information about that? So what we have to do is tell people. We also have to approach organizations such as NGOs throughout the world which would be interested in OpenOffice.org for political and financial reasons. We have to demonstrate that it satisfies their needs. The world has a lot of needs. Microsoft claims that it has more needs than it really does, but OpenOffice.org can nevertheless satisfy them. To give an example of one area that we can develop and make it more fun, Microsoft is right now claiming that collaboration is the next big thing, or is the big thing. They are claiming their Office 12 is all about collaboration. It's not just the glitzy new UI. It's also about collaboration. OpenOffice.org can also do much of this, but tell an average user how to do it, and it's very difficult. You have to present this clearly for them. I was in discussions with these people coming from Norway who are dealing with schools, and this is true throughout the world, I think, because I've had other discussions like this, where they told me that the schools require people to be working with application that allows collaboration. In schools, the situation is often where a professor has a screen like this and students have their work, and they're all collaborating, and the professor is overseeing this. And the question he asked me was, can OpenOffice.org do this? The answer is yes. And then he would say, well, how? Well, I said, this is, of course, where we have to do marketing. We have to have examples showing how you can do this. We don't have that. The most we have right now is examples of how you can download it. That's not really accomplishing anything. We have to be aggressive in demonstrating OpenOffice.org's capabilities as an application that satisfies the needs of people. This is not making it more competitive with StarOffice or with any other application or derived product. It's rather working with them so that people can understand that StarOffice, OpenOffice, that the code can actually do these things. Once we start doing this, we will be seeing more people using it. The other thing, coordination with native language groups. The way that marketing has worked for the last 3 years has been the native language groups distribute locally, grassroots. Marketing is kind of global and will often approach the corporations and governments and also present the overall image of what OpenOffice.org is. Right now, though, there's so much going on so quickly that we need real processes for coordination. I see in the next 2 years many small splinter groups forming, many small interests developing. Unless we have coordination, the message of what OpenOffice.org is will get lost. It's not a question of making sure everyone obeys a certain ruler. It's a question of making sure that we all know what the full world is doing with us, with the project. It's the only way that we can actually grow and be better. And I want to finish very briefly with a question that I left for myself. What is left for the future? I've already suggested a few areas. When I first wrote this, I had a long list of wish list, put it that way, of things I would like to see. But these are essentially idiosyncratic for myself. But what I would like to see for the future, the near future, is technological changes that make OpenOffice.org easier to work with. The most obvious from my perspective is to improve the build process. Right now, it doesn't build very quickly, if at all. And it requires some effort and knowledge. And in fact, it's a joke among developers that you test to see if someone's able to work on OpenOffice.org, if they can even build it. So I would like to see that improved. I think it's a crucial element. We should not make it a Rubicon that developers have to pass. We should make it a doorway that they have to merely open if they're the least bit capable. Second, I think that we've taken great steps in improving the process by which code is submitted, reviewed, and accepted or not accepted. Last year, this time, we had an agreement that the Engineering Steering Committee would publish very simple statements as to how code is reviewed, accepted, or not accepted. And I promised the Native Language Confederacy that by October 4th, I would send in instructions on how this could be done. I did, and the ESC has yet to publish that. So the ESC members are here, and I'm just needling them a little bit. But it would be nice if they could publish exactly the process by which code is to be submitted, reviewed, and accepted or not accepted this week. And if they can't do it, they should tell us why they can't do it. Because we've waited a whole year, and it'd be really good to have that actually out there. Second, we have to improve the process by which the actual submissions are reviewed, not just the information that this is being this is happening. That'll take some time, of course, because it requires, to a degree, a cultural shift as well as a technological undertaking. But it has to be done if we're going to anticipate moving to 3.0 with any degree of speed. Because otherwise, it might take a long time to reach 3.0. And that raises the third point, or fourth point. What is 3.0? 3.0 is the son of 2.0, but really it isn't. It's something I would imagine is going to be a lot more interesting. And if anyone has any idea of what 3.0 is, you know, stand up and tell us. Or you can go see the presentation on that. The fascinating thing is that, from my perspective, is that 3.0 should be something that is contributed to by the entire community. When 2.0 came out, there was the Q concept document that was the first big step in including the community in working on the roadmap. But it was a roadmap that had been three-fourths finished, and the community just added the last fourth, and it was mainly a review process. I think with 3.0, all of the community has to be involved from the ground up, from the beginning. Now, of course, this would be chaotic. It would be impossible, and Andre Schnabel here is grimacing, because for the last year, we've had exactly this problem. It's been a catch-22 of sorts. We don't have an intelligible or possible process for reviewing issues that are submitted by the overall community, people who are not developers. But I think we need to get such a process. Because if we don't have such a process early on, the community will lose a little bit. We have to have something, even if it's arbitrary to begin with, you have to start somewhere. Even if it's arbitrary to begin with, we have to have community involvement from the beginning. And by community here, again, I refer back to my initial statement of what a community is. It is people who are contributing, not just people who are using. People who are contributing in a meaningful and interesting way. So we have to start with that, and then we can start planning on 3.0 and going beyond 2.0 so as to have an application that will be used this time next year by 100 million people and 100 languages throughout the world. Thank you. So I left some time out for questions if you have any questions that I can answer. If I can't answer them, I'll be handing them off to Andre, Michael, and Quaylen to answer. So, yes. Yeah, it's actually interesting. It had nothing at all to do with the so-called delays or anything like that. It had a lot to do with the fact that there were at least 650 and probably closer to 1,000 bugs that were reported when the first beta was released. And so we had a choice to make at that point, or I didn't have a choice to make, but the release engineers had a choice to make. And it was an interesting choice. The old, I mean, you could probably add more to it than I, but the old trajectory was, let's release something that is actually usable without killing a person's computer. You know, you could have an assassination program out there, but we'd rather not do that. So we would rather have a program that was fully qualified. And that meant quashing all those bugs. So it took a while to quash them because they were not trivial bugs. Second, keep in mind now, because we are localized to so many different languages, that a bug that is labeled, say, a P3 for one group, maybe a P1 for another. And it's still lingering like that. So it becomes very difficult, actually, to go through all this and even prioritize it. But I think we did a pretty good job. It wasn't really a delay, per se. Now, that said, we recognize the shortcomings of that process. And for the next release cycle, we are going to be accelerating the process so as to have more releases, or rather more a quicker release cycle, not say 18 months or something like that, but speed things up. We had a discussion in the community council yesterday on this, and we'll be issuing a more full press announcement on it. But that's essentially it. One of the reasons was that having a faster release cycle will satisfy people who want the next code quickly, new features, make developers happier because they'll see their submissions manifested sooner. Developers right now criticize OpenOffice.org a great deal because they'll say, I submitted something in, you know, the year 2003, but only in 2005 do I see it. I'm going to say, yeah, what's your problem? But so we're able to say, in 6 months, you can see it actually in the application. And that'll make people happier. It's more in accordance with the GNOME process. It's more in accordance with modern development practices. Other questions?
How did you count the 40 million users?
It's a guess, because I only have downloads, and I have lots of caveats. For all I know, we have only one user, me. And the rest are just using pirated versions of Microsoft Office. It's there are organizations like IDC and so on and so forth that make a lot of money putting numbers after their guesses. But then they try to evaluate who's using what system and so on and so forth. And they said about a year and a half ago that we had 6% of the market, but I just don't believe that. It's possible. But if you start counting how many people are using Office Suites generally and how many, say, Microsoft Office, and then how much of a portion of the old Microsoft Office market we have, you know, you can start getting some really huge numbers. And it becomes a little bit problematical because my assumption is always that a good portion of people who are using OpenOffice.org are also using a pirated version of Microsoft Office. I'm very cynical about that. So the 40 million is just a conservative number based upon downloads and on trends. So, for example, we have, I can't remember how many million people have filed a registration form for when they register OpenOffice.org, they're actually registering themselves. And we actually try to discourage people from doing that nowadays. But it's a huge number. So just taking some guesses here and there, it's just a guess. It's not a cast in stone number. In back? I didn't quite hear you, I'm sorry. Come to my talk tomorrow. I'm having a BOP, and the BOP title is Imagining an OpenOffice.org Foundation. And the point of it isn't that I'm going to be arguing for or against an OpenOffice.org Foundation. I'm merely trying to clear the air to see if it makes sense. And if so, what are the arguments for and against the foundation? What are the stakes for and against the foundation? So please attend, and if you have opinions, please present them. And you had a question.
Do you maybe know how many lines of code does OpenOffice have at this point?
How many lines of code? I asked Martin Helmichel that at one point a couple months ago, because we were being interviewed by this Indian magazine. When we first, it depends how you count, but when OpenOffice.org was first released, it had 7.6 million lines of code. That's what we announced on our web pages, and I think we still do somewhere. But then we included the database application, and if you include that, that brings it up to about 10 million lines of code. which is, you know, quite small. Now, the interesting thing about OpenOffice.org code is that it's 10 million lines of monolithic code. And if I had my druthers and were able to tell people what to do, which I fortunately for people don't, I would say the most important thing we have to do besides improving the build process is re-architecture the entire application so as to make it radically componentized. Mozilla went through such a process and took about 3 years or so. And I think if we were radically componentized, it would be easier for people to start building components that they could add to OpenOffice.org. But this is a massive undertaking. It is not a trivial statement or a trivial thing to undertake. That's why you don't see Sun jumping up and doing it or looking upon this with glee. Other questions? Thank you very much.